I don't want to post this job description. I'm going to get 1,000 resumes. Then I'm going to have to comb through all those resumes. Then I have to do the interviews, and the candidates are probably not going to be great anyway.
How do practitioners know who to hire in what order?
Great question. So I think it actually surprises me how many people don't have an org chart for their business. Knowing who you need to hire months before you need to hire them is the most proactive and most powerful thing you can do once you're out of startup mode for your business. I would say the top 2 to 3 most important things I've done in the last 4 years is...
Hello and welcome to another episode of Freedom RX. For most practitioners, growth comes with a familiar tension, the drive to help as many people as possible without burning out in the process. But real growth isn't just about adding more patients. It's about building the right team and structure to support your vision, so your practice can scale in a way that's both sustainable and fulfilling. Now, the truth is, hiring consistently proves one of the biggest challenges that practitioners face on that journey. And that's why we've got Seth Conger and I diving into what really takes to hire with intention, build a team aligned with your long-term goals, and to create a business that's scalable, profitable, and truly supports the life you want to live. This is the Freedom RX. So let's get into it. Seth, how are you doing?
James, I'm great. It's good to see you.
I know over the last 5 years, you know, you've helped many practices in this exact topic, right? Moving from a chaotic startup mode into smooth, scalable operations. And even as I say the word smooth, scalable operations, I think that if you're listening to this, this might be the kind of thing where you're like, oh, that sounds good. How do I get some of that? So let's just start. You know, do you have a story maybe you can share with us where getting the right person into a practice really made it much easier for the owner and changed the game?
Yeah. So, you know, the elusive topic of smooth, scalable operations. I actually see the hiring is at the center of that. So when you're a startup, right, you're really focused on growing revenue. You're really focused on what is the service or the product that I'm providing to my customers? Can we sell that? Can we deliver on that promise that we're making, right? As your business grows, you learn that you can't do it all on your own. And so just as much intention that goes into the revenue side of the business and acquiring customers should at that point go into hiring, right? Because you're actually multiplying the force of your business. You are allowing yourselves to delegate things in, you know, more and more appropriate manners so that you can actually get to a point where you can see more people, have a bigger impact, and hopefully at the same time also grow your profit alongside with growing the number of patients that you're seeing. So to answer your question, I think that there are different key hires along the way that are extremely important. I can think of a lot of single individuals over time that have made a huge impact on the business, but really it's more important about the right person at the right time for your business, right? So if you get an incredible individual who is like the best, let's say the best clinician possible, right? And you think, oh my gosh, I'm about to hire a new medical director level of person who wants a job with me. Well, they may be way too expensive for what you're able to offer right now. And you may not have the ability to give them enough patients to actually allow them to fulfill that part of the business, right? So it's really about timing. And we can see that in every other position across the board in the business. So I think really the first, in many cases, the first hire that most practitioners are making is somebody for an administrative role. Usually this is scheduling, it is answering the phones, it is dealing with the customers, it is making sure that people show up on time. And we think of that as one of the lower paying jobs, right? And one of the lower importance roles. But actually, if that's the first role you're hiring, it is critical. It's absolutely critical that A, they match your culture, B, they match your work style and you enjoy getting along with them, and C, they're now the new representation and the first point of contact that all of your patients or prospects have with your business. So it's a critical, critical hire to get that one right. And then every other one after that, you know, we see the front desk team member, we see the first practitioner that may come in when all of the patients are used to seeing you. And now all of a sudden they're seeing someone else, right? That is a critical hire for the role. Next one would be manager, right? A practice manager of the business. All of your employees are used to going directly to you with all of their questions and all of their concerns and all of their compensation requests, right? And so having somebody else who's in that position is a critical hire. And what I can say is, as we start going through the methodology of who to hire and when, and as your practice is growing, it becomes more and more important to hire people who have been there and done that, right? Who have previous experience doing the thing that you need them to do. A lot of practices try to grow through just bringing people up through the ranks. And that's wonderful. And some people can do that. But at a certain stage, you actually need to bring somebody in that's better than you, right? You don't want to be the smartest person in the room in every single role. And I think that along the line, that becomes a really critical decision that a lot of people don't make. And because of that, they stall out and they hit a ceiling in their business because they haven't made those critical hires who can actually grow the business without the direct input of the owner.
Beautiful. Yeah, one of the things that I've seen you present to practitioners, and I think practitioners get on side with, is the journey to build their organizational chart. And, you know, that organizational chart at the beginning looks like you and that first hire that you bring in. It seems to me, just speaking to so many practitioners over two decades, that typically the process is quite random. It's like you feel some pain in some area, you come up with some idea to solve that. You don't know if that's the right idea. Compare and contrast that strategy to a more proactive, thoughtful, build your organizational chart in a predictable way strategy.
Yeah. So, you know, James, it actually surprises me how many people don't have an org chart for their business. I always thought it was a common thing. I came from a non-medical background, very large companies that had organizational charts, and you could see exactly who reported to who and what their title and position was. And you could click through that to understand what that person's roles and responsibilities for. And it brought a lot of clarity to the team. And I realized that, and this is not just a small functional or integrative medicine business problem. This is across the board with 6, 7, and 8 figure businesses. They kind of skip this step of having an org chart. Well, the org chart is akin to a profit and loss statement for your finances, right? You're asking all of your employees to keep this in their head of who works here, what do they do, and who do they report to. So the org chart just allows us to actually have a printed version, right? A visual look at who is in our team and what do they do? And this becomes more and more important as the team grows, right? So just having that org chart can be a big step for practices. So if you don't have that, there's pretty easy ways to do it. You can draw it out in pen and paper. You can go a step further and put it on a spreadsheet. You can even use a free flow charting software. There's a ton of them out there that just kind of like snap the boxes into place, right? This is a really, really easy thing to do. You can do it in about 30 minutes now. And it just helps align the entire team. So we use the org chart as a base for team forecasting, right? In the same way you would do forecasting with your marketing and sales. Like I would like to, if I'm selling 10 new patients a month now and I want to sell 20 new patients a month by the end of the year, it's likely I'm not going to get to that next month. It's probably going to tick up and I should plan for that because the associated revenue that we bring in from that is going to have an impact on our business. The number of new patients that we're going to bring in likely means I will need to either open up more capacity or potentially hire somebody, right? So that is revenue forecasting or sales and marketing forecasting. The same thing happens on the hiring side. So I like to go through an exercise. I do this now a couple times a year, but usually for businesses, if this is your first time, once a year is totally fine. I do what I call a future org chart. So I take our current org chart as it stands. I make a copy of that and I erase names and pictures and I just keep titles. and I write down my goals, right? What are the goals going to be for, let's just say, the end of this year? I want to see 20% growth in new patients per month. I want to see 50% growth in total revenue. I want profit to stay where it is. And to achieve that, I know I'm going to need some more people, right? So you start building out those blocks. You take the org chart and you add on, all right, I think I'm going to need a marketing agency now. If I have a marketing agency, someone's got to actually do the sales. And if that's not going to be me as the owner, then I may need somebody else, right? And we can see how you build this out. So the hierarchy of that becomes important when we don't want to just have a flat business. We also start thinking about things, and this is why it's so helpful to have this visually. We start thinking about things like, oh, I have 5 people reporting directly to me. Maybe there needs to be somebody in between that. Maybe I need to be starting to shift our service side or clinical delivery from the front end of the business, right? Maybe that shouldn't be jumbled together, right? And you get to see how this works out visually until you get to a point where all of a sudden you have, this is my future org chart. From that point, you start filling in names, right? Current names that you have on your current org chart now go into your future org chart and you see where they fit. Sometimes they all fit nicely. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes you realize someone's going to need to be trained up in a position, and that allows you to be proactive about that training. Sometimes you realize an individual may not make the cut eventually, and you can be proactive about replacing that person, and it gives you the gaps, right? So knowing who you need to hire, and I know we'll talk about this, but knowing who you need to hire months before you need to hire them is literally, I think, the most proactive and most powerful thing you can do once you're out of startup mode for your business.
Yeah, I'm so glad we're talking about this. And this is the reason, actually, that, you know, I've been wanting to be, you know, connected and working on this project together, is because as I look out into the functional medicine industry, it's pretty clear that this is the most important and missing conversation, because 10 years after kickstarting a movement to essentially help practitioners move out of their day job and start a micro practice, 90% of clinics are still in that micro practice stage. They haven't grown. They haven't added other practitioners. And I think part of it is because there hasn't been like a really clear roadmap on what to do, because so many practitioners, even the most successful ones that you see at conferences, you know, otherwise, are still in essentially a micro practice model. They're the practitioner, they have a couple of supporters, but it's been very difficult for them to add another practitioner. It's been very difficult for them to become maybe what their dream is, which is to be like clinical director. And you know, I think you've really hit onto something. How do practitioners know who to hire in what order?
Great question. So I think we're going to take a step back from that. You have to know what your goals are in your practice. Right. And James, you mentioned micro practices. You don't have to go any further than that. Right. If you want to have a micro practice, have a micro practice. That's cool. No one's pressuring you to add on additional practitioners or add on additional staff or grow for the sake of growth. Right. Some people want to stay there, and that's great. Run your practice as lean as possible and focus on having a micro practice. If you want to grow and you want to have a larger practice, you can't run it like a micro practice, right? So you have to understand what your goals are and in what stage of growth or what phase of growth you are as a business. So in this instance, we're going to assume that a practice wants to grow from a single owner and maybe a couple team members, or maybe they're just a solopreneur and they want to go and make their first hire, but they do have an interest in seeing more patients and in growth. We talked about earlier in this conversation that the first hire is really that administrative hire. And in most cases, that is the case. You make a hire on the administrative side for kind of the front office side of the business, and then you start looking at what are the administrative duties that are happening on the service side of the business or the back end delivery of your product or service, and how do I hire for that? So there's a really great model for this that actually my friend Dan Martell came up with in his book, Buy Back Your Time, which I think is the most incredible look at time management for business owners. But he calls it the replacement ladder, which is, what are the lowest value tasks that I am doing as a business owner, and how do I hire somebody to handle those? The interesting part that I like to look at when I'm applying this to medical practices is I don't usually go with a VA first. So a virtual assistant is not usually the go-to. Usually the go-to is a independent contributor, a full-time individual in a role in your practice, whether that's a virtual practice or an in-person practice. And the reason is because a lot of medical practitioner entrepreneurs don't have a ton of training being a manager, right? So that is a skill that they're learning along the way with all of these other skills that they're having to learn. So to have somebody completely offshored, out of touch, out of line of sight, who is just trying to do things for you to pick up the pieces, is usually not in the best interest of the practice. So I actually like to get to a point where you can shave off like 30 to 40% of your tasks and hand them to one person and allow that person to accelerate them and plan for capacity and growth. Again, same thing on the back end of the business with the service delivery. That could be a health coach. It could be a medical assistant, depending on your type of practice and what you're trying to do. And then you start building up the chain from there.
Yeah, I'd love to just double tap on health coach for a minute because, yeah, you know, when we started the Functional Forum in 2014, one of the goals was to sort of popularize this doctor health coach dyad, right? Because that was essentially, you know, a model that we saw as efficient. And as you say, it feels like that what I've seen a lot of practitioners do is to use the health coach in the support of the delivery so that, you know, that the it takes away the sort of lowest value clinical time for a practitioner, which is getting the people to do the thing that you've recommended.
Yep. I think that's, you're right on. And where I want people to be careful with is making their first hire be a health coach. Right? Because what happens is there is a lot of administrative work that needs to happen, and there's a lot of the clinical side work that needs to happen. If you hire an administrator first, they're going to take the administrative work and focus on that and not be likely pulled in the clinical direction because they don't have the capability of doing that, right? They can't be a health coach if they're only trained to be front office or greeter or, you know, scheduling. If your first hire is a health coach, there's still all that administrative stuff to do. And there's a tendency to pour that onto the health coach if they have extra time. Now what you have is a jack of all trades, right? So now you have you, the practitioner, and a jack of all trades doing two or three different jobs where they really should have been doing one. And then it just makes it harder to scale to that next level. So that's what we want to be careful of when we're looking at these hiring plans. It's fine to hire generalists. Many people wear multiple hats in the beginning in startup mode. Once you get into growth or scale, which is, you know, past five employees, hiring generalists only make it harder to either replace them for whatever reason. They could win the lottery. They could, you know, be on maternity leave. They could find a new job somewhere else, right? Whatever reason, it makes it really hard to replace somebody if they're doing multiple different roles in different parts of your business. That's where that org chart really helps out to visually see that, right?
Yeah.
So we want to start hiring specialists at that point. A health coach is a really good example of a, you know, first hire that is a specialist. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times practitioners say, great, I have a capable person who's wonderful, who works for me now, who's not fully utilized. Let me have them also answer the phones and do discovery calls. And do, you know, so now they're doing sales, they're doing front office, they're doing customer service, and they're doing, you know, delivery. And all of a sudden, everyone's burned out, but you don't have enough margin to make your next hire. So that's where we have to be careful in that plan to growth.
Yeah, I just want to feedback, you know, having been for the last 2 years involved in the FPC legacy and being in a room with 30 doctors and practices where they are going through this process and, you know, having conversations with them where they have very predictable futures, right? They know what levers they have to pull to get to the next stage, and they know ahead of time who they're going to hire. I've been in functional medicine for 20 years and I have never experienced that. And so it's been really great to be amongst a group of practitioners where this is just the norm and this is what we do. How does a normal practitioner, maybe who's listening to this, know whether they're in the sort of reactive mode or in the proactive mode? What would be the telltale sign?
Yeah, I think the telltale sign for being in reactive mode is I need to hire somebody today. Right. If you ever or yesterday, if I ask you, hey, James, when do you need this hire by? And you say yesterday, you're in reactive mode. I'm hiring four people right now. I don't expect to hire any of them in the next 2 to 3 months. But we have job postings out there. And if the perfect candidate comes along, great. We're early. But according to our strategic plan, we have 2 to 3 months to make that hire and still be on plan where it doesn't trip us up in another area. So most practitioners, and again, most small businesses across the board are in reactive hiring mode. It's just like health, right? Patients are coming to functional and integrated medicine practitioners usually because, not because they're just trying to optimize their health, although there is a huge growing area of longevity and, you know, with direct primary care in these other areas. But for the typical functional medicine doctor, somebody's coming to you with a chronic disease, maybe two, maybe three or four, right? And they didn't get that way because they were proactive about their health. They got that way because they made reactive decisions about things that were in front of them, and they tried to put one foot in front of the other for the whole life, up until a point where they said, enough is enough. I've got to do something about this. And what do? Well, you take care of what you can in the moment, but you also teach them how to be proactive about their health so that this doesn't come back after they take all the supplements and after they do all the dietary changes and after they, you know, have all of these phenomenal interventions that make them healthy again. So hiring is like that, right? I like to see 2 to 3 months minimum for a hiring plan before I need to make a hire. That allows me to write a job description, circulate that job description with my team or other colleagues, make sure that we are spot on and everybody agrees that, yes, this is the role that we need to hire. And if the perfect candidate reads this, they're going to say, oh, this is my dream job, right?
Yeah.
And then I want to organically search for that person. I don't want to spend ad dollars on Indeed or ZipRecruiter or LinkedIn just yet. I want to organically search on my social media communities and in my networks. And I want to see if I can find this person through a referral because I have time for that. Mm-hmm. And the candidates that I get in those early stages actually help me tweak the job description a little bit better so that when I am ready to put dollars behind it, I know that we're going to get the highest quality candidates. So it's only about after a month that I am ready to post this job description on one of the platforms. And I'm prepared for the deluge of resumes that we're going to get. I know that we are going to get 1,000 or more resumes in for this job. And so I've proactively blocked the time on my schedule because I knew about it a month ahead of time to go through these resumes. Right. If you don't think about it proactively, there's almost this like disincentive, right? And it's a subconscious feeling of, I don't want to post this job description. I'm gonna get 1,000 resumes, then I'm gonna have to comb through all those resumes, then I have to do the interviews, and the candidates are probably not gonna be great anyway. Why am I doing any of this? I just wish people would be better. And I can tell you, if you get proactive about it, it's an extremely enjoyable process because you know you're going to get the right person, and that person is going to be an accelerant for your business in the right way at the right time for you.
So as I'm listening to this, if I'm putting myself in the shoes of the practitioner, I'm thinking two things. I'm thinking one, I want my life and my practice to be like this, but I'm also thinking, I'm not sure if I want to be that guy. And I'd love to just ask you, at what point and what would have to happen in what order to have someone in your practice who could be running that whole thing and you could just be getting on with what you're good at and knowing that you're getting that without having to do that?
Yeah. So I would say the practice manager hire or director of operations, whatever you want to call that person who's your second in command in the business, that person, a key responsibility and skill set for that individual must be the ability to hire, right? That is, yeah, I'm the COO of our ecosystem of businesses. And I would say the top 2 to 3 most important things I've done in the last 4 years is develop a hiring process and make sure we hire the best talent in the most proactive way. That is not something that our CEO does. And we had that agreement when I first came in, right? So it wasn't news to me that that was going to be a role that I needed to excel at. And every single practitioner I talked to who's looking to hire a practice manager or director of operations, whatever that you know, second in command position is, that is the number one criteria I go for, unless that owner happens to be an incredible hirer and they like that portion, right?
Yeah.
Owners like all sorts of different roles in their business. They may like to be a practitioner and want to lean in further to that. They may want to do more financial things. They may want to become really a true CEO, right? Or they may like the operations or the sales side of the business. Knowing and understanding that is really important before you bring on a practice manager. But that person must be able to A, manage, but also B, hire great talent.
So what does your business have to look like to, in terms of revenue or people, where it's time to hire that person?
Yeah, usually a practice manager comes after you have built a few building blocks around you, right? So you have somebody taking over the front office and administrative duties. You had at least one individual on the service delivery side. That could be a health coach. It could be an MA. It could even be a mid-level practitioner in your business. And then you start looking at, how do I fill in sales, marketing, et cetera? Usually, and this is usually not all the time, but usually practitioners fill that sales role for quite some time. They do the initial evaluation and then they move the prospect into a patient program or membership or whatever your business model is. After those two people, right? And if you're doing the sales, you can think about fractional groups. So you may want to have a fractional marketing agency that you bring on board to start putting some money behind paid ads to bring in more clients. You may have a fractional finance group, would be maybe like a bookkeeper or something, right? So that you're not doing the books. So I usually like to see either 4 team members or 2 solid full-time team members plus 2 fractional groups before I'm even thinking about bringing on a practice manager. So a practice manager is usually about the 5th hire, somewhere between 5 and 7 that you're bringing on, because that person is going to manage the rest of the group as they're growing up, and then be your hiring arm for future growth so that you can focus your time on more higher value things such as sales or such as program development or even program delivery.
Beautiful. Well, look, I want to just feedback a couple things based on this conversation, because I actually believe that this is the most critical conversation to be having at our state of the industry. You know, I think that the vast majority of clinics in the industry are stuck in the micro practice model. And ultimately, you know, I have seen firsthand with clinics that you have worked with why, when hiring the, as you described it, the savage practice manager who's going to come in and own this piece, is about the happiest day of their life, right? Where they realize that someone is now in charge of all these things that they don't like doing. So I would reflect that. I think this is the most critical moment. And then beyond that, you know, one of the things that I think is really powerful about FPC Legacy, and one of the things that I've enjoyed about it, is that one of the things that the clinicians love the most is that it's not just them that gets the coaching and then they have to like, deliver all that coaching down. You are actually spending time with the second in command people and having them learn from each other. Because essentially it's the same thing across all the different practices. They're coming up with the same issues, same problems, same issues. And, you know, just the amount of sort of ease that is created by knowing that as a business owner, my second in command is being mentored and supported by a network of those second in command. That's unique. Never seen it. Super valuable. And I know people who are in that group who know how valuable it is to have this sort of second in command alliance. So I just want to share how valuable I think that is for the whole industry.
Thanks, James. I take a lot of pride in that because I'm a second in command and I understand what power that can bring to the business when that individual is really clear on their role and their responsibilities and how that benefits others in the organization and how we get to our goals in a more predictive manner if that person is clear. So it's one of my favorite things I do all week is mentoring that group. We had a really cool meeting with, I think 18 people showed up today at the workshop and we went over their Q1, right? Quarter one of 2025 results in their key performance indicators and all of the projects that they took on. We call those OKRs. We go by a framework with that, but, then also, what were their plans for Q2? And they were all able to lay them out. And it was amazing. Yes. And guess what? No one hit all 10 of their KPIs or all 8 of their KPIs, right? Some of them hit 6 of them, or some hit 5 of them, but they knew what they were working towards. They knew what was important to the business. And I think the most powerful thing that came out of that meeting that was different than the owner's meeting was they knew how they were disseminating that information, right? The second in command, the key team member, as we call them, they were disseminating that information to the rest of the team. And the rest of the team was clear on what they needed to do to hit the most important metrics for the business, right? And the owners had a clarity around that, and they had a feeling of safety that there was another person in the business that was also looking out for the most important things. One thing I would be remiss if I didn't say this is there, once you bring in somebody like a practice manager, that does not mean that your job as the owner is done there, right? Your job shifts. You now have to be an empowerer of that individual, right? You have to be extremely clear with what your expectations are for them, what their responsibilities are, what their accountability is, what authority they have in the business. And also, you need to be checking in with them on a regular basis. They're not your executive assistant, right? And I see this mistake made a lot, not so much in the FPC community, but when I talk with other groups outside, I see that the mistake is made of, oh, I now have a really capable individual. I'm going to dump all my things on them. Next thing you know, you have a practice manager booking travel for the owner of the business, or you have a practice manager who is in their email box sifting through the emails. That's what an executive assistant is for, not the practice manager, right? So your job is now to empower that person, make sure they don't get overwhelmed, make sure they are allocating their time in the most effective and efficient manners, and then make sure they're doing the proactive things that are keeping you on track for the business. So I just want to be cautious about that, right? Because it's not the great white hope of hiring a practice manager that is going to fix your business and everything is just roses and blue sky after that. Your role shifts into being a leader of that individual and the rest of the organization and empower them.
Well, friends, this is the Freedom RX. You just heard it. This is the prescription for freedom in your life, in your business. And more than that, this is the pathway towards real community impact, because we have to build capacity for chronic disease reversal. And that means practitioners like yourself, you know, getting themselves in a position where they can truly make the impact that they have and have the freedom that they want. And Seth, I'm really grateful for you, you know, sharing the pathway and that journey. And there will be many more episodes like this to come on the Freedom RX. Join us next time. We'll be getting into more of these kind of conversations. And feel free to get in touch with us too if you're interested in joining FPC Legacy, if you want your second in command to be supported by a network of other second in commands who are executing on KPIs and OKRs, if that sounds like the kind of world that you want to live in, we're just a phone call away. So thanks so much for tuning in to the Freedom RX. I'm your host for this episode, James Maskell. We've been here with Seth Conger. Thanks so much for tuning in and good night.
Thanks, James.